It must be close.
Good morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, January 23rd, 2018, 9:30 a.m. This morning, Board of County Commissioners, Commissioner Hare present, Commissioner Morgan, and myself, Commissioner DeYoung, are present. 9:30 this morning, City Council quarterly meeting in the conference room. Present, we also have Mayor Darren Fowler, City Council President Valerie Lovelace, and City Manager Aaron Kubik. And in the audience, too, in case we need him, is Chief Bill Landis, Public Safety Director. So, thank you for coming over. Good seeing you. Long time no see.
Yeah.
Haven't seen you guys in a while.
So. Yeah. Things are rocking and rolling, aren't they?
They are. Things are moving. I spent yesterday in the Capitol yesterday and had a very good meeting. I felt it was a good meeting on the cannabis industry in Southern Oregon.
Yeah, a bunch of adults talking about marijuana.
It was, meeting was supposed to last 1 hour, a little over an hour, and 2 hours and 15 minutes later,
wow,
we're still talking, and 60% of that time was focused to Josephine County. And our interest down here. So it was...
Josephine specific, not just the four counties or the five counties.
No, no, this was just Josephine specific because we were touching on the first step up there is they have some concerns about our ordinances on rural residential.
Okay.
And we had a lot of clarity brought out on that particular issue. They were much more comfortable. The city right across from me was Christine. I didn't catch her last name, but she is the lobbyist for the Sun Growers Guild, which always has... Okay. Issues about anything that has to do with the cannabis industry, and we had a real good dialogue. And I, you know, we contributed a lot. Rob Bovet, the legal counsel for the Association of Oregon Counties, was there with me also. So we had a real good exchange. I think we got to meet some of the right people that we'll be dealing with in the next couple of months. Hard to say. This is one of the things that's a real concern over any issue at the short session is, they call it heavy lifting. That's a lot of lifting to do in a short session. So, but, you know, in my mind, if we are not successful in getting it this go-around, we'll be right there in the 2019 back to champion it again. So,
which is the longer session, right?
Longer one, and you can get a lot more.
A lot will depend upon how the election today turns out as to what the session looks like.
I think I think Rob Bovet has a couple, three places that he thinks he can place this thing so it'll be heard at this session. So that's the important part.
Okay.
I'm still working on Representative Wilson. I understand a softening to the fact that he was helped craft this thing and then he had some second thoughts about it. I think in my mind, Representative Wilson was just basically... I think he's having to vet this thing in his own mind to make sure that he's comfortable with it. So, talk to Senator Beartrager. I think they're all kind of waiting because they want to be collectively, Stark, Beartrager, and everything. They want to be on board, you know, as one. And I feel as though we need that. I've talked to an awful lot of people just that are coming forth now with support. School districts and stuff are coming forth with support. I did. Task the Sheriff Daniels with what would it look like if you had all the money in the world and what would it cost?
Mm-hmm.
So he came up with a matrix that I think is very important. It includes three deputies for the high schools because they're screaming to have some. They're starting to see where they are trading marijuana for homework at the high school level. And other things.
And sports and clubs and everything.
You know, it's just...
it's a career now. It's not just a...
Yes. So, you know, I think it's important that we touch all aspects of it and just in the initiative, just not only get on the initiative because we're not here for that, but it holds something for everybody, all players in the rooms except for the black market or open market grower. Is the only one that's shortchanged on the whole thing. Yes, sir.
So I was just curious in your conversations with the sheriff and, you know, if you could have the perfect system, what did that have a dollar amount associated with it? Because I know back in the day you guys were, like, funded at, like, $17 million or something, or even, what was that?
The max was probably 14.
14, okay.
The average was anywhere between 10 and 12.
Okay.
Right now the levy does 7.2, so you could... consider it being a $3 to $5 million delta. Stuff has gotten more expensive since
Yeah.
So if we had another, I mean, the $1.48 proposal that was the one three behind, that had a significant number of patrols assigned to it, the same number of jail beds. it accounted for those school deputies. There were seven elements that were included in $1.48 that could be achieved. And so we're also, you know, if you had the, there was a 2006 report that said that the average county in the state of Oregon needs $2.47 per thousand to operate at a minimum level for all services, not just law enforcement. So C.W. Smith worked on that, former commissioner over in Jackson County, and that's probably a good place to start. So if we're somewhere around, you know, $1.52, something around those, you got another dollar.
So. Another ways to go.
Yeah.
Or another stream to find.
Yeah, well, it could be shared receipts. We're looking at some resolve with the federal lawsuit on ONC sometime this year. So we've got some rulings so far.
And a receptive federal government at some levels.
Well, you know, the judicial section is supposed to be separate from the administration. And Judge Leon has heard ONC cases before, and he's ruled favorably.
Okay.
And he understands the issue, and he knows the supremacy element of a specific act as opposed to a general act.
Well, and where do we fall with budgets now that with our new levy? I know we were at the bottom of the whole list of counties in the state of Oregon.
It doesn't change our permanent rate, so we're still at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Levies are just temporary. They don't.
Yeah,
right. They don't affect the actual rate.
Okay.
So, yeah, and the Southern Oregon counties, the five Southern Oregon counties involved in this are all quite down their ways, but one of the things, and you asked a question, Aaron, that he gave me a number somewhere in the $20 million range, but that included detectives, that included a marijuana strike force, that included an awful lot of things, you know, that that now is being handled. You know, and we talked heavily about the OSP's participation in Southern Oregon, and they've ramped up their stuff. One of the things that the state would get back from this would, if we could take care of ourselves and all the needs that we have locally at the county level, those troopers could get back onto the state highway system. I mean, our state highway system, we're seeing more head-on fatalities on Oregon highways. I mean, we had that one 238. We've had a couple on the Parkway. We've had a couple of them. So, I mean, they need to really get back onto patrolling, and they're not, I don't think they're cut out, and they've been taking care of it, taking the bull by the horns, but I think they would like to rather get back into what they were designed to do rather than doing county.
Well, you know they would, especially they've had some lawsuits as a result of that, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't feel this is, you know, and Representative Wilson put it out. He said, well, if the feds want this fixed, they should send us the money. Well, they didn't send us the money because they didn't do secure schools. And if the state wants it done, they should send us the money. Well, we went and testified last year at the long session. Commissioner Morgan championed that, and it didn't go anywhere. We tried to get a reallocation of the funding coming back down here. Between Josephine and Jackson County, we constitute 30% of the canopy grown in Oregon. So if they gave us 30% of the revenue, say they collected $100 million, they should be giving us $30 million down here to split amongst the two counties.
Yeah.
And that's not, we're nowhere even close to that.
We'll take half that.
Yeah. We're not even close to that. So we have to come up with a different wrinkle. And this different wrinkle, like I said, I think has some merit. It's got some real traction up north, and it's certainly got a lot of traction down here in the five southern counties. So
has the city council discussed this? I mean, I know
we want to offer a letter of support. I was going to ask you when you need that by.
Yeah, just this week would be great because I'm going to speak with, I've got an invitation back. Well, three of us have an invitation to speak with Billy Williams. He is the U.S. attorney on February 2nd in Portland.
Okay.
And I would like to have a folder of letters of support for all five counties and anything involved in the police department, public safeties, you name it. But that would go along with the city. But for instance, I've got community corrections directors on board. All five sheriffs are on board. Juveniles are all on board. I just got a commitment from the school district over the weekend. No, just things like that. Any letters of support from people that are affected by the industry, I think, is very paramount.
And
we need to demonstrate to Billy Williams, the U.S. attorney, that this is going to fix it.
Doing the detective work for the county.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few strong points that could weight that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So anything we can do, letters of support would be greatly appreciated. Like I said, I know I'm going up on February 2nd to this. It's an invitation only. With U.S. Attorney Billy Williams, and he's very aware of this, of the initiative, very, very aware of it. So His main question to the state of Oregon is, how are you going to fix Southern Oregon? Mm-hmm. They don't have the funding to do it. They're not interested in giving us the funding to do it. We don't want our handout any longer. We have mm-hmm. a solution. Let us go ahead. And I think, you know, I don't know if he has the ability or if it's within his thing to endorse it, but I hope he has some strong words for the state of Oregon when he's here.
It's a pretty important issue to Josephine County, not from the school's only perspective. It's changing our culture. I think we were the first county to have a cannabis advisory committee.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot of economic activity happening, yes. but it really doesn't translate into hard dollars for mm-hmm. the county to do code enforcement, law enforcement, follow-up on, you know, taking stuff out of the state. And mm-hmm. I think the feds are going to be paying special attention to Southern Oregon. So we probably generated around $260,000-$300,000 in revenue from the cannabis industry, that tax formula. It's going to improve next year because of that distribution formula accounting for some measure of the canopy, but it's a far cry from if we needed $5 to $7 million. $300,000 is there's a big delta between what we need and so this is one avenue that I think could be really positive.
Yeah. One of the key points in the marijuana initiative is that nobody has applied a number to the price per square foot or price per plant on the OMMP side. We have not purposely done that because we don't have the numbers that come back from the state. They're still processing applications on the medical side, so we don't have a clue how big this thing's going to get. So for right now, we're purposely leaving those two blanks. I use the $1 per square foot and $50 a plant just as a starting point. However, if we see that we have more growers than we anticipated, the other thing is this tends to want to say if the black you start leaning on the open market, going to have a tendency to encourage them to get into the system, mm-hmm. into the state system of tracking seed to sale, and so I think it will grow on that side of it. But that number is flexible. It may come back as 78 cents a square foot and $36 a plant. We don't know that yet. It purposely it's left blank. I don't think for the sake of going to the legislature that number needs to be put in there. It's more for the sake of the voter in November is when that number needs to be clarified. I met yesterday. In fact, I met with the lobbyist for the Sun Growers Guild, and I said we were going to very well want the Sun Growers Guild in the room when we decide to determine what that number is. This was commissioner talking. I would like it to be consistent across all five counties so that you don't get the opportunity for a buyer in Portland to say, well, I'm going to buy from Josephine County because it's cheaper than Jackson County. Mm-hmm. I don't want to set up competition amongst those five counties. So I think we've got a pretty good proposal. So.
Do you guys have
looking forward to pushing
of the marijuana? I mean, are you seeing those in the city limits in any special regard?
Well, certainly in the schools, but
I'd have the chief respond. Maybe if you could.
What was the question?
Come up. Whether or not there's been any negative impact of the increase in marijuana production in the city limits? Are you guys seeing anything specific
since it became legal?
Yeah.
We're being joined by Chief Bill Landis. Public safety director.
I think to be honest,
it's probably premature data. I don't think supports that, and so it's speculative.
Okay.
I can tell you that I don't think because it came legal, we've seen a difference because marijuana has been here prior, even illegally. So I can tell you that our emphasis from a raid narcotics task force has switched from marijuana to heroin and methamphetamine, and so mm-hmm. we're seeing more of us and those results than we would have marijuana in the past. That I think the direction of the task force was more in marijuana, which is why council supported us taking a leadership role and going in a different direction. So you probably see spikes in that arena, which I have data to show what's happened in the year that we've done that. But I really think it's premature to talk about, or not talk about, but to come to a conclusion as to whether or not we've seen an increase of marijuana-related cases or things within the city. I think the SRO in our school or District 7 hasn't seen a spike, but certainly more things probably that we hadn't seen in the past. Related to the marijuana industry.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did the feds raid anything in Southern Oregon this year?
I don't know that. I don't know those numbers. Yeah. One of the things, people say, well, what's in it for the governor, because she's ultimately the one that has mm-hmm. to sign it. Well, the governor is putting at risk the entire, I don't know if I would ever, I guess it's got to be out there somewhere, exactly how much money and revenue the state of Oregon took in from
the dispensary side
last year. Yeah, from the dispensary side in their first step. I don't know what that number is, but say it was $100 million. The governor needs to look at this thing that says, and the federal government now, Bill Williams has said that Jeff Sessions, now the coal memorandum, is now leaning on Oregon. And even though all of the things that the Oregon legislature did in 2 years and making the rules and establishing the rules and the seed-to-sale tracking and all that, those are all good steps. But he specifically said, what are you doing with Southern Oregon because it doesn't have the revenue in order to supply the enforcement for the laws you just put in? And, of course, the state had no answer but to say, we aren't doing anything with them. We're not helping them a bit. So no, that puts
the ball in the court. They allocated some state troopers disproportionately, I think, to the they said they did.
They allocated it, and then they the governor reallocated those monies towards health.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. So they did put more troopers down here.
The legislature did absolutely support more troopers coming to us specifically, and the money was moved. Correct.
So when we get right back to it, so they said, what is Southern Oregon going to do? This is a solution for what is Southern Oregon going to do. We'll take the bull by the horns, and we'll take care of it ourselves. Billy Williams, I think that's going to be very favorable to Billy Williams. But here you now, you've got five Southern counties that is the... If the feds aren't going to do anything about it, they don't have to do anything about it if we can do it ourselves. But what is it for the governor? What incentive is it for her to sign this thing? She needs to understand that if we don't do something about the black market down here, the feds will shut it down statewide. She'll lose all that revenue overnight. She could potentially lose it all overnight. She'll say against federal law to even collect for it because it's back to being illegal again. And so that would be, that's the risk that she has to take. And so I think there's incentive all the way around to pass it.
The disproportionate focus on Oregon instead of Colorado, Washington, or California is because of our major black market?
Because of our hole in the fence. Right. I saw the statistics.
And the ability to not
the statistics I passed out the other night, that's from Billy Williams. And I had Peter Gendron in my office, and he read the numbers, and he goes, well, those numbers aren't entirely true. And I said, you just need to understand something. Those are the numbers that Billy Williams is looking at. He doesn't care what your numbers are. He's going to make a decision off of his numbers, not yours. So you go ahead and hold on to that thought. I don't think it matters. So anyway, I think we're on the right track here. And I don't know whether we're going to get it done this session. I certainly hope so. I think we could push and push and push and push and push. And it really doesn't affect the rest of the state other than in a positive way, because it takes the pressure off the state legislature to allow us to do something for ourselves. So I hope it works. We'll try.
Thing that I'd like to bring up is the high-intensity drug trafficking area, HIDA. I know Chief Landis and I have talked briefly about it. I've talked to the sheriff about it. Of all the counties on I-5, we're the only county that is not a HIDA county. And it's basically us committing to...
What's the acronym again?
Yeah, what is it?
HIDA. HIDTA. It stands for High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area. I think with the changes that have happened with the RAID team focus and the partnerships that are there, that it would be more in line with what the intentions are. But essentially, it's an opportunity to partner with the federal government. If we're putting resources towards trafficking, they will in turn couple resources with us and help in that area. And we are the only I-5 county not in this program.
Okay.
I also want to bring it up because I notice it's on the agenda for the meeting next week with Billy Williams, the Assistant Attorney General. And so it's something that's going to be a focus in that conversation. And so I think the time is right that our sheriff and chief and state police apply to be a part of the HIDA. And I think that we need to pursue that path more intently at this point.
So who is the one, who's the agency that really takes the lead on that? Is it the county or
is it the county?
Can I speak to that?
Yeah.
So you pull a chair up.
Yeah.
You're in there. So you like it. You're not going to sneak out of here.
So a year and a half ago, I started to pursue HIDA. The challenges with HIDA is there's a lot of administrative paperwork that goes with it. And while I'm not shy of that, some of the RAID board and OSP, who's part of that board, had some concerns. Well, my department takes on the administrative responsibilities. So where that's at, as long as it's taken some time to get vetted and get through it, is the raid board just needs to decide that, yes, we will do that to pursue, and we can become Haida County.
So that's who applies is the raid board itself?
Yes, because really
your drug task force takes on that.
Sometimes it can actually mean special prosecutors. It can mean additional resources, and that's where that money pretty much gets spent or sits. So as well as tracking, because you have to track, you know, all the data, things that you're doing and how that's done to report so that you can remain with the federal government receiving any of those benefits and things that come with that. So I've been a proponent for a year and a half. It's taken a while. My raid board member, Lieutenant Moran, is pushing to actually have that come to a head. OSP's member of that board is leaving, and so that created some challenges. Lieutenant Lux is being reassigned up to Douglas County. I think he's going to a different division, and so I hope within the next month or so that the raid board will vote to make that so, and we can pursue that now.
Well, and if we need help from our level as far as reaching out to OSP and various getting that support on board, I think we can get there.
So Ryan Mulkins would be one, since Ryan sits on the raid board. I know that I believe that OSP was the one that was worried about the administrative function, but because my department takes that on, it's not that they will have to assume. So we manage the forfeiture.
Is that a legitimate concern, given that every other county on I-5 is a member?
Exactly.
And that seems odd.
And OSP is a member in every one of those counties. Yeah.
And it's changed over the years. Back when that first came about, for whatever reason, the criteria didn't match Josephine counties. But we've done a better job of tracking and doing things that would qualify it. So you might remember the opioid symposium that we had in the council chambers, I think it was like 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, a year and a half ago. That's when I first met with a former U.S. attorney to start pursuing that, gave me contacts. So it's been a long journey. It just sits with the raid board right now to say, yes, we can go ahead and pursue that. So Ryan Mulkins might be one if the board wanted to speak to.
So the raid board members are who? The sheriff, Ryan Mulkins?
Sheriff's not part of it because they don't participate.
Oh, that's okay. So Ryan Mulkins, we have Nate Gowrie-Ran.
Community Corrections.
Yourself, OSP.
Correct. That's it.
Well, then we can talk to our people. I mean, that's... I mean, Nate doesn't get to make decisions without conferring with his...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, he does, but it's... Right. They're not an elected position in Community Corrections, so if the policy wants to be a part of it...
I think OSP was talking a lot about the administrative piece, and so I think that's been vetted. So I think we just need to vote, and I think that the DA and Nate... I haven't talked to them specifically because I don't want to influence decision-making, but I just know that's the feedback I've got from our board members that's been tried.
I called Nate every Monday, and I was not here yesterday, so I'll give him a call today, and this will be a subject.
Is there a board meeting scheduled?
They don't, basically because of schedule, so they call them about every other month, so I'm not sure when the next one is.
How is it a raid? I don't want to get into too much of the specifics, but it seems raid doesn't seem to me like policy body as far as being initiating something of this direction. I mean, I would certainly look at it like Lipsick as a recommendation from RAID to, like, the Board of Commissioners or City Council to say, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, and we rely on people who are experts in law enforcement to provide that kind of insight about cost-benefit analysis. Yeah, this is a lot of administrative overhead, but you get all of this integrated oversight into something that is, I mean, this little intersection here between I-5 and the coast is not a surprise to anybody as a major traffic area for drugs going all through the state. I mean, you have to go to either Eugene or Portland to see the same kind of numbers traffic-wise that ODOT will tell you. And I think this is higher than Eugene's intersection to the coast. It's crazy, the amount. And so that this intersection of I-5 isn't part of that seems...
So it's a cost-to-benefit ratio for each of the participating agencies. And so...
If you don't have them at the table and engaged...
Are we missing out on information that goes back and forth between everybody else on I-5 that we're not getting as far as trafficking goes because we're not a member of...
No, the task force do a good job of communicating, I believe. Prior leadership, this is just my opinion, was not so good about that. And so the new direction with the city manager's support and council blessing us to take a leadership role, We've changed that. It's also why at that time I thought it was right to pursue HIDA, because I had some barriers prior not being in a leadership role, and I don't believe the RAID board at that time was really a policy board as they should be. Because really the problem with, not the problem, but probably the way that RAID is made up is that each one of those board members brings their own resources to that table. Mm-hmm. And so when decisions are being made that might affect how they manage those resources, that's where there's some resistance. And so us taking over administration, us taking the leadership role, it's much easier for the board now to say, yeah, let's pursue HIDA. So I think that's where we're at different.
And I can email out the link to the, or if you just Google Oregon HIDA, it's actually Oregon-Idaho HIDA. So it goes through what the components of the strategy of what it's about. And so that would be good just for us to all be aware of. But it is significant, I think. It's been a few months that we've talked, and I've talked to the sheriff, and so it's a matter of how do we...
And I pushed a long time ago. It's just I had a barrier because I was not in the leadership role. So now when that changed...
I think we want to be supportive. So whatever.
And yeah. I will email an update to Aaron to disseminate as far as where that's at currently, so it's, I don't have the latest, but I know that it's at the board level, and I'll get a...
Well, there's two liaisons to corrections and DA, and those members of the board can certainly try to work, you know, in partnership effort to getting this.
Yep. I think we're all.
So does the board support me contacting the DA to ask him to?
I think that's safe to say. What else is going on?
So I know one of the things we're wanting to do is utilize this meeting as an agenda setting to some degree of our joint sessions that we have over there. Mm-hmm. There were two items that we thought would be good for our next session. One I've had a conversation with Simon on, which was economic development to some degree. We've got an economic development group that we are partners in, although we really haven't had any reporting to the policy boards on what their activities are. And so I feel as though it would be nice to have a stronger connection with that advisory board. And I was thinking as a recommendation that maybe we utilize our meetings jointly over there to have a representative of that committee come and give a report on a quarterly basis, and when we have our meetings, on what activities are going on to help build that relationship and that connectivity with that new group.
And provide some clarity for direction. I think that they are looking at a task that's really tough to define exactly what the course is, and it's probably not as much their fault as the product of the economic development plan that was created really didn't give specifics other than creating, from a policy standpoint, this advisory committee, which we did. Yeah. Now I feel like there's some joint responsibility at the fact that they're not reporting, they're not giving direction to the policy bodies. I mean, I would ask them that they need to be recommending something to change that these two governing bodies can work jointly on every month to say, you need to work together to do X, Y, or Z. And I'd want to hear that. And that would be, I think it's a great suggestion, Aaron. And we need to lean into it harder before we say it isn't working. And that's my opinion. I mean, it's been a year, and there's some, I feel, some responsibility on our parts that we haven't given them a perfect product to say, these are the top 10 things they need to work on.
I've gone on the top 10 things this sparked. Is there any prioritization of those top 10 things? And that's what's interesting to me, you know, because I hear, you know, you dump a bunch of money into airports for some reason, and you're going back to Madras, which we went from League of Oregon Cities. They decide to put their money, economic development money, into Madras as matching funds to get a lot more. And when they did that, when they got 10 cents on the day, provide 10 cents on the dollar, and Madras Airport was all, the whole town of Madras all of a sudden started to jive and get all kinds of this grant money in there to get a lot of projects done that they could never do on their own. But they used that economic development money as seed money towards those huge projects. If we look at it from that standpoint, rather than economic development dollars funding the entire project, is there any list or catalog that you can that they can provide to us to say, you know, if we take $80,000 and give it to the airport, it turns into $8 million or whatever?
I think that's part of the problem of what Simon was mentioning, that direction, that focus is not there. The plan that they were given doesn't really have some of those real, these are your top 10 priorities, this is what you need to be working on. This is ultimately what we're trying to measure and what we're trying to improve. I think if you went to them now, what are you measuring? What are you improving? How are we going to get there? Those are some questions that I don't know if are fully answered.
So we have spoken separately, but I think with a very similar message to the Economic Development Group, that our fundamental, their premise is to improve the median income of the city and the county. We're one of the lowest in the state, and I don't want to argue about why that is, but I think you can't lose anything by just having that narrow focus on everything that you do, think, say, should reflect improving the median income level in our community. Getting it above $34,000, getting it to $44,000. And then you can say at the end of the year, deliverable, as we brought in 10, 15, 20, 100 jobs that are above the median income level, that's success for me. And so I think getting that clarity. The other thing I was going to say is coming out of our joint goal setting sessions, I think, in the next month or so, is going to really provide, hopefully, that committee some specific direction that we want to accomplish in 2018. And that might be the appropriate time where we assign them things to work on so that they're not trying to come up with those on their own. That might be beneficial, giving them clear direction.
Yes.
And we can work on that on either side. And our lists don't have to be the same. In fact, they probably will overlap, but they might be separate. So,
Well, and yeah, a couple projects that have come to mind that I, you know, that it's like, okay, do those go through like an economic development group to say what are some options and solutions here, or is it just a matter of working with staff members to get them done? But
I think we can decide that, if we come up with six things that we want to do in economic development in 2018. Three refer to the committee, three we keep in-house and are just in-house projects. We don't need everything to run through there that isn't. I don't need any input on the North Valley Industrial Park, sewer and water system, which is a topic for me to discuss with you guys just to figure that out, that we have a plan. We're looking at, in the next week or so, selecting a preferred contractor to be our project manager, something I've wanted for 7 years. And we just can't seem to get projects underway without that focal point at the county, without an administrator. We don't have that consistent direction when we've had 8 different commissioners here in 6 years, 7 years. So it's really tough to get it moving forward. And I think that's going to be beneficial to bringing increased water use out there and not be an impediment to when we've got companies knocking on our door, either at the city or the county. We need 10 acres. Well, we've got 10 acres, but you can't utilize a toilet, that's a real impediment. Most people, they got to have some of those systems.
I think my frustration with economic development and the organizations involved with that is every time we bring somebody to town, I've been to a couple of the luncheons when they bring somebody to town, a potential business that wants to move here, first thing we do, right out to Spalding and out to North Valley Industrial. We assume that they are here to build a new building and add into our inventory. When I don't know if we're addressing or even asking, do you want to move here now? And do you know that up north of town there's an old grocery store or an Albertsons or
down by
or
the
yeah, there's all kinds of buildings around here that are already vacant and ready for you to move into. That with a little bit of refurbishing and upgrading, you'd be in business with that in a heartbeat. And I don't know whether we have that inventory to give to those people when they get here. They're always trying to say, well, we want you to build an industrial park because then, that basically they've got to go through all the hoops of planning and building permits and you name it. They got to do all of that before they can even turn a tap when you might be able to steer them and say, you can open up your business here and then decide whether it's going to work here. I use that foam plant for industrial foam plant that we met with the other day. And, immediately it was, gee, we got to find a 10-acre lot for you to put your new plant on when maybe there's already something here that they could utilize to get started and get their foot in the door and say, yes, it works for Southern Oregon. It works. We want to be here because we're between San Francisco and Seattle.
Well, Commissioner, we know that at one time in previous life you were a city council member and you had mentioned that as a concern also. It's taken a little bit of time, but Susan does have a list of some of those, some of that availability out there.
Good.
She's worked with
she
a number
needs
of
to
community
be at
members.
Those meetings we just spoke of.
She's a city liaison.
That's not hard to get. You go to a commercial real estate.
You go to a realtor.
They probably keep that. you could get an up. You don't have to keep that an updated version yourself. You just have a person you go to, and Rogue Valley Board of Realtors, just say, this is what I'm looking for, and they go, sure, we'll have that for you in 45 minutes, and it's current information, and you're not giving them something that they can't deal with. I mean, you got a bowling alley up right next to the freeway. You got all kinds of property up there right next to the freeway. It just sets fallow, and I do not understand that. I don't understand it. So, but that's okay. There might be economics that keeps it off.
So do you guys see a future of us sharing some sort of economic person? Or are you guys going to have your own economic development staff time dedicated?
I think if we had a clear trajectory and a plan of action that really needed somebody, but, you know, to just staff it, you guys are staffing it, I think, point, and with Julia's backup on it right now, I think the board could be convinced to put in resources. We used to fund a person through SOREDI at $50,000, $60,000 a year. We could certainly find the resources to contribute, but to what end? I don't want it to just
gotta have a
sit
plan
there.
Because
there's, you know, every dollar that
I need deliverables.
There, we don't have available to appropriate to our parks or our airport, you know, and those monies really multiply. The airport's doing $5, $6 million worth of capital improvements, and in the next 4 years, we're probably looking at another $20 million with the runway extension and some other infrastructure stuff. So there's certainly a need. You guys have a need, the Spalding Industrial Park, getting that. I guess you guys are talking with a contractor that was one of our preferred contractors, Mall Foster and Alonji. Those are the contractors that helped work on the Demick campus, did phenomenal work up there, and so I couldn't put in a better plug for them for just the thoroughness that they bring to the table when working through a project. It's the thing they do when they get up in the morning and before they go to bed. This is all they do, and they've got highly qualified staff. So,
well, next couple of weeks we're going to, a little longer than that maybe, we're going to look at the feasibility of putting our water plant out in near the Spalding Industrial Park instead of near where it's at now, because we're going to rebuild.
Yeah.
And so it's just something we're going to vet and see if it works, because then that could move that whole Spalding a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
Because the water would already be there, and we'd have ditches heading that way. So, yeah, it could kick that one a little.
Right.
Just kind of new information we got from a consultant. Like, ooh, never thought about putting it out there.
See, and that's the whole reason why, I mean, it's things like that is the where you pay for it with a consultant who says, well, why didn't you ever think of that? It shouldn't be us coming up with these ideas. And we all need to agree that we're not experts in how sewer water systems work.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
they walk in with a blank canvas.
Yeah.
We've already got the picture painted.
Yeah.
They're going, well, gosh, I'd have put a flower over here. Why did I think of that?
Yeah. Well, if you drive out to White City, RCC campus, you go right past the Medford sewer treatment plant. Nowhere near Medford. You know, and so there is something to being intentional to have envisioning further out.
And the big trucks that go back and forth wouldn't come into town anymore. They'd all be out.
I've always found it interesting that Medford's water plant is upstream from the sewer plant, but they have no concern that our water plant is downstream from their sewer plant. It just doesn't. I don't know. They just don't seem to take that into the
mix. You still drink the water.
I do.
We filter it first, but yeah.
That's why I don't have any hair left.
You guys have another issue, if you wouldn't. We've got to respect your guys' time.
The other was that the mayor and council president talked about was emergency management, and maybe when we have the our next meeting, that maybe between Commissioner Morgan and myself and whatever, Commissioner Morgan's taking the lead, I think, on this coordinated effort, that we could have a report on that at some point.
One thing that came out of the initial presentation before the council was that several of them are very new to the concept of emergency management in general. Mm-hmm. And speaking with Sarah, she thought it might be helpful to coordinate with Chief Landis or Chief Johnson as far as actually just doing an educational, what is emergency management? Why does the city need to be involved with emergency management? Why do we even, what's the impact? Kind of go back to a basic 101 level presentation before, so there's an understanding of what it is and what the need is before.
I think that would be a very good thing, is to say, what exactly does it entail, and who would
it be? Where are we and where are we?
Workshop
level?
Yeah. So yeah. Is that something that you would envision that we would have before our joint meeting, or that that would be part of the joint meeting?
I think that would be beneficial to have before that meeting.
Okay.
Because then as you come forward and say, we're looking at what is the best for our region, what is the best for our county or city.
There's at least a foundation to build.
Yeah.
Correct. That is, I think you will eliminate a lot of the questions that potentially would come up. And this was some feedback that Sarah had gotten directly from a couple city councilors, and just realizing the depth of questions. And me thinking back through my time there, I think Councilor Riker is probably the only one that's still there since the last time we had a discussion about it. I'm sorry, man. I meant you have a new council, you know.
Well, I also agree, just because at one point Dave Reeves was kind of part of it and kind of threw a few things in here and there. But, you know, I never really totally knew what he was doing, but I just knew that he was a guy who was in charge of it, and we would ask questions about the water. You know, what's going to happen if water goes down? Where are? But that's really all I have. So
I think the city's element is far. If I live out in rural America and the big shake comes, if my barn falls over, the odds of me being in it are nil.
Right.
But when you get density,
exactly,
this building could fall over and have a devastating effect on a whole bunch of people.
And the needs afterwards
and
are totally
the needs
different.
Afterwards.
Yes. Well, I'll point out this morning, you have a 7.9 in
Alaska.
And
all up and down the West Coast.
But it happened in the middle of the night. So what is the impact of, in our sleep, what would happen? So, but the reality is a lot of it, when we created the EOP, the plan and stuff like that as a city, that's pretty much the limit of what had been done. There wasn't a lot of that knowledge passed on, and so with having a new council, the recommendation would be to have them get a basic
foundation.
101 foundational beforehand so that they have a grasp of why.
And frankly, it would be advantageous, I think, for the city to kind of couple with the county's project in the next year is to develop a continuity of operations plan. And leading the council through that year-long process, and the person that we're considering hiring or retaining in that joint effort, she's just done that. She led the effort through the state, knows the program backwards and forwards that we've already agreed to use. And so it's really advantageous that we have, like, the expert in the state of Oregon.
And already has some view of it.
Oh, yeah, she's not making it up as they go. And having gone through it once, I think she's going to know how to really get the best out of it. Mm-hmm. And just going through that process is going to educate the council, the board, all of the managers and staff about what it looks like and what's expected. I think that's going to be really...
And that may have to be a special little retreat of sorts. We wouldn't go anywhere. But we'll try and put that bulk of information on our present agenda. It's kind of tough to swallow.
I don't think you have to do that yet.
Just a foundation, and then when we work together, I think that would be the year-long process.
I mean, if,
I think just a foundation is a big
deal. Elementary education.
If you look at the proposal as it stands right now and all the different plans that are included... It's not at a basic level necessarily. You would, and that's, but the whole idea is that you would have a team working towards getting you
there
with all of those steps. So, Sarah's recommendation was, just because primarily emergency management works with fire departments, would be to start with Chief Landis, as far as, you know, if it's with you guys' blessing, would it be best to couple with them if need be, to see where the presentation came from, kind of thing, and as far as general fit, and she is available as we need her to be a part of that. So.
And if I could just add something, and only speaking for the city, what the regional concept is, I'm a big Sarah person. In fact, the only downside is being dependent upon Sarah versus process. And so one of the concerns with emergency management is resources. And so when you have competing entities in a major event, is whether your resources can stay home or whether you give up the ability to control those resources, where others may prioritize different things regionally then. And so moving forward with this concept, as I've talked with Sarah and stuff, is just with Sarah there, I have all the confidence in the world that, you know, those roles and responsibilities and needs would be looked at properly. Short of her, because I don't know who else that might be, is whether or not there'd be strength to be able to leave resources or see priorities where the city may have priorities versus the county or versus another county if you partnered with, and how that might be, it's interesting when it's just on paper or just a concept, but then when you do have that shaker or that thing that happens, how those resources could be pulled and allocated, and who would be, you know, in control of that, who would be available at that time. So
I think that's a really good concern, and it's probably the most fundamental concern, because mm-hmm. that's the whole premise of that role. Mm-hmm. And looking at it from a governance structure about who's sitting at that table is key, you know, to say that no one person gets to make that decision. It's a joint effort, and you've already got a designated executive committee who will convene, and those backups to that. And the other thing that I looked at, having done this for 8 years in that position, of seeing how we're always finding ourselves reliant on usually one person, and that's never, that's likely never
changed. That's eggs in one basket.
Yeah. The fundamental for me is that you'll never have just one person in this regional approach, because you're pooling resources. You've got four. You lose two, you've still got two.
Yeah.
That's huge to me, to say there's backup for backup where there's not backup for backup here now.
But even if you lost all four, there needs to be a manual that is agreed on by all four. Yeah. That the manual.
This process.
Well, everybody going through creation of their own coop, because we'll do it independently, but if we go about it in a timeliness together, we're all at the same level. We're working on things and in processes. Sitting down at the same table from an executive, you know, committee group, so you know what's going on, you're sharing information regionally, is so much more than we've ever done right now. I mean, my updates are with Sheriff Winter sometimes out on a fire, and we talk about, man, I didn't know you had that trailer or those resources. It's so much. I just can't say enough about the advantages, potentially, if we can get past the anxiety of having control over it specifically and what it does for our resiliency on a region. I can't say enough about the potential of it. And yeah, it all could go poorly if you don't have the right person, but I think we're blessed to start. And the start, for me, sets a precedent about what it looks like, to where other people inherit it and our expectations are at this level. And you can't deviate from that when everybody's saying, no, this is what we expect. You're not doing it, we'll find somebody who will, because this is what we have to have, this is what we have at.
And that agreement, just so that the political bodies and competing interests can't influence the process that's already been put in place.
Yeah.
And so that's my thing. When crisis hits, all of a sudden the politics and who can control what happens versus what you do in a meeting where everybody's kind of agreeable until that changes. And so that agreement needs to make sure that that helps stipulate that, mm-hmm. so it can't be muddled when all of a sudden, you know, that thing happens.
Yeah.
This is part of why this co-op of sorts has its own executive board, of which each entity has one representative on there, so there's equal representation. That's why, to me, it's important that we have the City of Grants Pass there, so that it's...
For parity.
It is parity. Yeah. It is, so that we have one county, one city, equally at the table, and all of our interests are looked at. I mean, for us as a board, we've said, and in talking with Aaron as well, that no matter what the outcome with the regional one, we as a county want to make sure that we're working with you as a city, no matter what.
Right.
We have to identify resources in our community first and foremost, and see how that works.
But you brought up other players that we aren't utilizing currently, which if we had a broader executive team, we could look at that breadth. The schools is a big one.
Yes.
I think that's really a key component. So we're looking at this as an experiment, I think, from our perspective, but we've frankly been building towards it for over a decade with the creation of the Rogue Fire Chiefs, and having just our leading threat in our plan that's sitting right over there, it's wildfire.
Fire district representatives, too.
That's it. And so we just finished the first in the nation regional community wildfire protection plan. Oh. It's a little under 300 pages. It's comprehensive, and we're the first ones to do it on a regional basis. Oh. Took 5 years, two contractors, too much money, but it was thankfully Title III.
Of course, we get to live it, unlike some other counties.
Yeah, we'll play it out, you know, every year. And so I just think that there's a number of things that have kind of been building on a regional basis. It just seems to make sense in my mind, and so we'll see how it plays out. I mean, I think Commissioner Morgan's absolutely right, though. Partnering with you guys, regardless of what happens, is key to moving forward in a cohesive way.
And I think identifying the concerns, which, by the way, we had, Aaron had, you know, we all have these same concerns of we're smaller, how do we still have a voice at the table? And how do we make sure that if partnering, it doesn't hurt the community? So that's part of the plan. You work those things in the plan and identify them and have that done ahead of time so that it mitigates those issues when they happen. And hopefully, you know, it'll be a win-win.
Okay, so we got that one. Anything else?
I think those are the two we have in mind.
Yeah. I have
agenda items.
And I have, I'll just throw this out there. Because we, on your urban renewal plan district, about the only place that we really touch is the fairgrounds. We really touch there in more ways than one because you completely surround our fairgrounds and so on and so forth. How does the fairgrounds work into your urban renewal plan? How can it be, how can the fairgrounds benefit from it? And how can, you know, what's your visions? I mean, we have them thrown out there and everything, but I would rather have something that's a little more.
Yeah, that's okay. A tough one. I could start.
It is. You know, I'm not asking for a commitment. I just want to know how the two interlink.
I feel like it's out of our purview a bit because it has the county, it has the fairgrounds, and it has Dutch Bros now that are all kind of invested in what the future of that might look like. And we as a city are like kind of watching what's going to happen. But then on the other side, that's a really huge chunk out of the middle of our city that we want to make sure is utilized to its best, whether it's fairgrounds in combination with other things or, you know, some of it being redeveloped. And so we've been trying to watch closely what the fair board and the county says about the future of that. But we kind of feel like we're a weaker player in that decision.
You guys proposed last time to work on a joint plan of even hiring a contractor. I thought there was resources offered, and a joint effort wouldn't be exclusively to look at. That's the largest piece of property, largest owner, single owner, in the entire city, maybe more than you guys. We own 72 acres in that one spot, and that's massive. We're definitely leaning in from a fairgrounds perspective, is coming up with creative ideas about what to do in the future. We're looking at ways to maybe even expand the retainer that we do for the North Valley Industrial Park to a project manager who can look at facilities, who's that fresh face, who can look at the portfolio of options for public works to take a look at a better space for them that's not right on the river, that's prime developed. And if we start looking at freeing up some of those spaces, you can start thinking about, well, what would we want to put there and designing it?
Would we be best served right now, because there's excitement in the fair board, to let them go through with their master plan and what they think the footprint should look like in the future? You know, we've talked about carving off public works maybe and maybe 4-H extension. I think that there should be a conversation with the school board because they own a big slot right down through the middle of it. They park buses on. Encourage them that those buses going through the busiest intersection in Josephine County on the Parkway, i.e. Ringette, every morning and every afternoon, adds to traffic. And maybe there would be an ODOT element to helping them move or do something along that line. So should we just let the fair board do their thing and come up with
it? No, in my opinion, I think we need to parallel. And it could take them a while.
Keep talking.
And theirs may not be, and you've instructed them, I think, to say that that's great for a plan, but it has to dovetail with what the rest of that footprint wants to go to. And I think we're committed to the idea that the fair is going to stay there in one shape or another.
It may not be 72
acres. I'm okay with that. It's taken probably 7 years for me to just kind of settle on that. But how do you put it with something that dovetails really well and makes it all boats rise? And we need to work aggressively in this next year to look at those facilities in the most efficient way and get a plan. The transportation package passed. ODOT should be looking for another facility. When we move, we can take that Three Rivers and move them. Those are easily done. Putting a plan together to move forestry and parks to a location that serves them better. And one of the things I wanted to mention was taking 4-H and putting them maybe at a place. If you go to Jackson County and some other counties around the state, 4-H OSU Extension is on more rural settings where they have an opportunity to put stuff in the ground raise bees, do some other vertically, you know, classes where they're hacking squares out of the concrete and asphalt. Mm-hmm. If the fairgrounds is not the best and highest way to do agriculture.
You know, the city has some exclusive farming.
That might be a good tree
for some urban
partnership
rural.
Would be really great. And I don't, we don't need a big footprint. And
right.
So the other ground that we have would be out at Schroeder, and it isn't big enough to facilitate everything we want. But
I think the city would love to come alongside and help pay for someone to help look at that for some outside eyes so that we are moving forward. I think that, council, I didn't mean to say city. But
so we just got done with the strategic planning session, and we separated out all the urban renewal projects. We have about 14 projects in our plan. The area surrounding the fairgrounds and the fairgrounds county property fits under underutilized or underdeveloped property, which we have resources allocated for. And so, yeah, we could definitely do a plan. It did not actually hit our top two, and we're really probably going to try to focus on two for a period of the first 2 or 3 years. The two that came out the highest was Spalding, because we have an individual that wants to create employment land and move an operation there. And then the other was the town center area, Caveman Plaza area, dealing with parking in a master plan for that area, because we know that there's going to be a corporate office going in, which is going to create some issues. So that's going to take the majority of our resources. Now, we could reprioritize one of those two or somehow do something along those lines. But the key for the urban renewal area would be, is the county willing and able, would the county be interested in, through this process, letting go of some of that acreage that you have? Because the key to urban renewal is to get that to produce for the economy, but also to put it on the tax rolls.
I think at this stage, everything's on the table. But I wouldn't want to, you know, say, in order to receive these grant dollars, to hire a consultant to take a look at the best and highest use, you're going to have to give up 7 acres or something like that. I don't think we can.
Right.
We've already given up a park. So if you want to categorize, what are we willing to give up? We've done that. The city has got jurisdiction over the access point that used to be county property. So,
Tessing Park.
Tessing Park.
Thank you.
So we've kind of put out that chip already. And I like to look at things holistically, how long term and where are we going. So, but we're going to likely get a recommendation from the group to retain somebody to look at efficiency property management. We'd love to partner.
I would say group.
When you say from the group, I'm wondering what group.
I have an ad hoc group that the board allowed me to do for the North Valley Industrial Park consultant.
Okay.
And we're just making a recommendation, having interviewed two. Apparently, I have to interview a third one to get that recommendation across those T's.
Yeah.
And then we'll hear that recommendation and make a selection probably really soon.
Of a contractor?
Of a contractor.
Yeah.
And part of that recommendation would likely include a property management consultant element to it as well. So,
well, because when you discuss fairgrounds and ODOT, I don't want to leave out Quest, CenturyLink, and Pacific Power, because they both used to be rural, but now are eaten up by our city and are underutilized lands again.
Totally agree. I think we need to have a footprint that could facilitate even the people we haven't thought of yet that may come in the future. And I told you my plan. You know, it's a campus-wide thing with separate sections, but a central administrative office, and to where we're subcontracting out for, and every, you know, diesel mechanics, or next it's going to be electric cars and some other things, driverless cars. Our transit facility needs to be able to grow and accommodate those things, charging stations, and maybe alternative fuels. So looking to the future that we're all leaning into this effort. Mm-hmm. You can pay for stuff like that when you're doing it and dividing it by three or four, five people utilizing it. Any one of us doing it on our own, that's inefficient and costly. So,
and it's an opportunity where we're all at this point.
My question is, where are you on your transportation, master transportation plan? Because I know we just got started.
Transits.
We just started.
We're just beginning ours. This might be a really good time to
compare notes, because I think that's really
You mentioned you had two on your goal
goal setting.
We had a top two. The top two. We can always move this one.
Well, I'm not talking about moving. Maybe what's your anticipated completion date on those top two? I mean, are they going to go on for 15 years, or do you figure, you know, in 4 years we're going to have this thing settled, we're going to have the update on the thing, and ready to say, okay, we've checked that box, it's gone, and something else then moves in. Are we looking at 4 years from now that we would be able to say, okay, you guys retake a look at your urban plan, and you can say, all right, now let's, you know, now we'll concentrate on removing all this other stuff around the fairgrounds maybe and making a big move? Would that be something you'd 4 years you'd be able to? I'm not asking you to change your priorities.
No.
Because priorities, you guys spent 4 days, 3 days doing priorities. You know,
and
there,
those are going to move quicker than probably this
project.
Is there
any tiered element to it? I mean, if those are your top two, what are your another, your other two?
You have three.
We had a bunch of them tied for 3 to 8.
Because that's where we would like to see our stuff enter into. It's a second tier. Our North Valley Industrial Park is tier one, I would say. Right. We're leaning into that effort.
That's our tier one. That's our first. But you guys have the industrial park. When do you look towards completion on that to say, you know what, we did that. We checked that box and it's done. You've actually got it done. Is it something that we can look at in 5 years? Is it something we can look at in 6 years, 10 years, whatever?
Well, to answer specifically the Spalding, it's difficult to give you an answer at the moment because we're actually looking potentially, like the mayor mentioned, of moving our water treatment plant to the east, which would have an effect on what infrastructure and what timing we'd actually put in there. So if we actually move our infrastructure to the east, then we'd be doing that within the next 2 to 4 years with that move. Therefore, we would need to bond out the project and for urban renewal in the Spalding area. And the payments that we'd be getting, the tax increment finance would be beginning on an annual basis, a lot of that would be going to cover the bond. So we have resources in a small amount, and the same thing would be for the downtown plaza. We may have enough in the bank to pay for a portion of something that happens down there, but mostly what you do is you wait about 5 years once an urban renewal agency is developed, and then you start bonding projects. Yeah, and you start building it out. Now, if it's just a plans, we could funnel out $40,000 or something like that. If that's a partnership and part of the plan for the redevelopment of that area, we could do that. That's not a problem.
That would be great. I think we're looking at it as a second tier, and we need to start planning on it now so it comes to fruition.
Well, it's such an important one for the community and both entities.
So. And what we mentioned in the strategic planning session is, unlike the other projects that we have, the majority of the other projects, the urban renewal agency projects are really sometimes dictated by external forces. So what's happening from private enterprise, because you're trying to leverage public dollars with some public dollar investment. So when you've got private entities coming in, they may change your priorities. This isn't one where if the Board of Commissioners and the others that are the stakeholders in that area are ready to go, that is an external driving force that may push up one of our priorities to make that happen.
And that's why they made top priority a lot, because Dutch Bros is ready to move.
Sure. So you know you've got some private money willing to step in.
Then we can bring the agency with their approval.
And that's the whole purpose of it.
I was just trying to get some kind of target date that we should have a plan ready on our end for that area, for the fairgrounds in general.
Well, wouldn't that master plan, though, all work? We'd be doing it at the same time.
I think so.
I'm kind of confused because you've kind of talked about two different things. You've talked about the fair board and being at that meeting. They were specifically saying, and of course I was the only counselor left in the room by the end of the time, and so they were, when they were talking about the master plan, saying, well, we're going to go to the county for funding, and we were thinking maybe the city might come on the board. Yep. You know, that is one master plan, but you're talking about a totally different...
I don't think using the word master from a fair perspective is an appropriate term. It's 72 acres of county-owned property. We are the only people who can do a master plan for that footprint. There are subsequent, you know, elements to it. And
so
that's
the fair board is simply talking about their little fair
concept of what it should be. Okay. I guess semantics to me, master plan. I guess there's a definition somewhere in the confines of this building what it actually means, but I just want to know what their vision is for the fairgrounds.
Yes. So my concern, and that's great, but ultimately what we're talking about is encompasses so much larger than just the fair
for us. I agree with that.
And so that. I mean, they've got this look right now, and ultimately the other look that we're talking about is huge.
Right. Yep.
And that would change their potential plan, and it could
and
totally
it could.
Change it.
They're well aware that they're an advisory committee.
Okay.
So if the Board of Commissioners is saying, we're ready for the big plan, then I'm sure that the city with urban renewal dollars can help with that.
Well, let's work on that. And
is that an agenda item for our next meeting then, or is it?
Well, I think when we come, I know we've printed up the top 9 goals and that sort of thing, but we as council haven't seen the breakdown voting wise on.
That's Monday.
On the Monday. Because as I say, I haven't seen the exact numbers yet on the urban renewal.
So one thing I'd ask of you guys is, I'm wondering. Once upon a time, when I was a brand new council president, we had admin meetings with the county that we went like this once a month. Mm-hmm. And if we're continuing to kind of be looking at these projects, is once every 3 months or 4 months enough? And
I think this could be.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, more often. And then try once a month. We're probably going to miss one or here or there.
Yeah, but that's fine. I think putting them on the agenda, usually we used to send the chair or.
Right.
We would do it.
Well, before that, it was all of us.
Right.
When I first was council president, it was the whole mm-hmm. board with the council president, the mayor, the city manager. And then it shored down to a smaller group and stuff like that. But, you know, if we are continuing to have dialogue about how are we looking holistically at the community and coming mm-hmm. up with these plans as a whole, I'm wondering if quarterly is often enough.
There are some major things that we're not going to get to the conversation today. Allen Creek is an issue for us moving forward.
We have a lot to talk about.
We do. UGB, I'm here for 11 more months, and I tell you, I would really like to get that IGA finalized in my next 6 months, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It would be great. What can we do to partner on that effort? I've done the draft of what I'd like to see talked about in that IGA, and we can get that moving and put it to bed as far as people coming in. And is this a city issue or a county issue?
Uh-huh.
Well, what's your urban growth boundary? There's two.
There's two.
You need to tell me where you live, and then we
confusing.
Go look at that map and say, so it's just one of those things. The jail cap, I think, and utilization from a city-county perspective is a concern that I've heard. I think it's at a level of liaison in the sheriff's right now, but I don't want that to fester. That's something that we need to make sure that we're all on the same page. Commissioner DeYoung, Chair DeYoung, has a Lower River Road element of a jurisdictional exchange.
Yeah.
And the list that we put together already under the old IGA, you know, I think Aaron and I chatted about mm-hmm. that. You know, where is that in process? Are we able to move that forward in some capacity, or what is the sticking point on it so far? There's stuff that I want to see, and we'd like to invite you to the State of the County address on February 8th. It's at the Floral Building from 4 to 6, and it would be great if you guys wanted to invite the entire council and even maybe some of your managers. We've decided to take a not as much of an involved step in the Realtors Joint City-County.
Right.
We found ourselves getting, allocated 40 minutes, and then we got 8.
At the end. Yeah,
right.
I saw that happen.
I thought it was 9.
It might have been.
You're off.
And so could you guys take the lead on setting the monthly meeting? Because your schedules are more difficult than Valerie and mine. So you could put together the best for that. Please consider our schedule as well.
Oh,
but,
sure.
you guys have a busier life.
I have two real quick ones, and one of them is Allen Creek Road and funding coming from DOTDOT to that. I think we were on board. We brought that funding back to Josephine County 7 years ago, and we're still talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's a shelf life on that funding. Usually when ODOT or anybody gives you funding, it's to spur economic, construction and so on and so forth. And we've kicked this thing around now for 7 years, and now we're back into when we could have got it done for this amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're over here because we can't get contractors. They're all busy. Another one is that I've heard grumblings about, and it's just strictly on a city side, and that's your $500,000 for the for the overlook down in Riverside
Pavilion.
Park.
The Pavilion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Pavilion. I don't know if there's a shelf life on that. That came from lottery dollars, I believe, mm-hmm. with the exact same charge that you do something. Not that you sit there and, you know,
That one's finally moving.
Yeah, we'll be constructing that in the spring, and we actually didn't get the money until this fiscal year.
It's just a concern to me that they want to know what color the roof is and which way the branches go on the trees. Are they going downstream or upstream? I don't think they care about that, but they want the project to move forward. So that's just a concern to me on those two projects.
Yeah, we get it, but yes. I would say I know just talking with Laura on the Allen Creek. I mean, she's ready to go, and that's she's kind of where you are on that. As we've got to get this rolling.
I'm just concerned about. And then the next question I had, because that was a question brought to me, is why is the motel up north end of town stalled? I haven't seen any activity there as far as construction in probably 3 weeks.
I don't think it is stalling. It may be inside work or something.
I think it's inside work. That happens a lot when you get a building like that. And they're waiting to do the stucco until the weather clears. It looks like it's going fast, and then it goes to a halt because they're doing a lot of the inside.
Okay, so I'm just sitting in the drive-through at In-N-Out, I'm always seeing activity.
Yeah, I think it's just because...
Whenever I'm sitting at the drive-through In-N-Out, I'm always seeing activity.
You always take a look over there? That's your road trip?
Well, in a totally unrelated subject... before the community starts forgetting about how awesome Brady Adams' contribution was, I'd like to ask for your help in getting that 7th Street Bridge renamed for him and see if you have the appetite for that. It's an unnamed bridge. It's right there by where his projects were. And
well, I think it makes a lot of consistency.
Do we have to petition ODOT for that?
I think so.
I think it's ODOT. And so it might be our legislators, but I think it'd need a letter and some push from us to start. But I'd really like to see that done.
Well, I think Brady was in the Senate and Deb Potts' seat. So I like the idea.
It's really good. The continuity.
Deb Potts, Senator, and then
Brady Adams Bridge.
I think that's great. I think it's a great idea.
We're not naming the
It's not
two
the most beautiful bridge, but it works.
Over,
well, I think the connection right there with all that he put down there and all of his style is right there at that bridge, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it's a wonderful idea.
I'm excited to see the 6th Street Bridge getting redone.
I don't understand why they're taking the banister off. It looked like they were hacking on that intensely.
On the light posts for
days. Well,
just
to get the banister things off. It's like...
They're making it ADA accessible.
That's not why they took the right side off.
It's because it's not strong enough to hold a car from going over, so they're going to rebuild it exactly like it was, exactly where it was.
And they can't do it ADA,
it
so that's just the thing.
Yeah.
Is that we're kind of going, seriously? You can do all
we
that,
asked
but
over
you
and over.
Can't.
Yeah,
they went back afterwards and said, are you serious? You can't do it? And
they
take it
in.
No,
they just
they said historical accuracy trumped ADA access. And we're like, that doesn't sound right, but...
And they figured that because 7th Street Bridge was ADA that they were okay with that.
Right, just send them over.
Send them over to
ADA. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so we're gonna highline it, just over the zip wire over to 7th Street Bridge.
We didn't like it either.
Well, you can't walk two people down the way at once.
No, you can't walk your bike across.
We wanted an outboard path to go on the outside of it, and they said, no, looking upriver, it would destroy the looks of the bridge.
I did recently get an email from Art saying that we're going to get 3 additional inches.
Yeah, they said, and I talked with Gary Leeming and told him, and he said they were still working on doing everything they could possibly do. Because they knew we were after them.
Rock Creek Bridge.
Can we give them the measurement stick that they use?
Old Hill. It's the same.
Here's 3 inches.
3 inches.
These are 3 inches of Johnson County.
I once bought a fish.
All right. Let's get back to business here. Anything else from the city commissioners? Do you have any other concerns for this meeting?
Well, I like the idea of going to monthly, so I don't feel like the urgency of getting through my list is all that necessary. What do we have as far as your agenda for the quarterly meeting, and when is that?
So quarterly meeting right now, it sounded like I consensus that we would have economic development on the agenda.
Right. And have a committee report, too, to add that agenda.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But that's the only thing I have right now.
I think we were the contractor for the joint project of the master plan for the fair. I'd like to see that discussed. By what's the date on that? I was hoping to.
We don't have a date.
Okay.
So
if we can put a date. I'll make sure that I have a budget for that contractor, potentially of what it would take. What I'd really like to do is have that being a very high level and it be a hosting a community discussion, several of those, much like we did for the TGM grant for the Demick campus. I think that would be advantageous that we've facilitated these meetings, we've heard from people, they provided input, and then it comes back to the governing bodies and the advisory committees that would have jurisdiction over that to say, okay, this is what the community said, here's where we like to go. I would rather not do like infrastructure stuff. You know, that can come after to say we'd like to do this. Because if it's the right plan, we'll figure out the infrastructure because it's in the city. It's right there. We'll make it happen.
Well, so that means emergency management dropped off that agenda so that we can have some
We'll have our own workshop.
Council catch-up.
You're going to have your own to tell the counselors and kind of get them up to speed. And then maybe we'll put that on for the next one.
So do we set dates or who sets dates for things?
I'll work with Karen and the both offices will work with scheduling one.
I have a question of the city council. Maybe you can answer this for me because we are anticipating Simon Hare's retirement. Mm-hmm. So we're trying. Who do you have up for bids?
We have four seats.
Four seats that are available
in the fall. Dennis Roller, Roy Lindsay,
Rick Riker,
and Jason Anderson.
Okay.
So those are the four.
Have you heard any movement from any of them about
Jason
what to react?
Jason said he was not going to run.
So Jason is not coming.
He intended not to run. The other three have not given an answer yet.
Okay.
Although I pushed him recently.
Yeah, you pushed him.
I pushed him pretty hard.
Yeah.
At goal set.
Because it depends on whether you're going to have a big rollover or turnover, or you're going to have a fairly mild one.
A mini rollover.
Yes.
Well, because we could lose a lot of institutional knowledge with Roy and Rick and Dennis.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, the floundering that we've had for the last 8 years will be fixed in T-minus 11, so it won't be here anymore. But I think the state of the county will be really, really revealing about where we've been.
What day of the week is it?
It's February 8th. I've got it
down. It's Thursday, I believe.
You said 4 o'clock?
It is Thursday.
4 to 6.
It's a Thursday. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can you send over an agenda for that eventually?
We're ideally going to have it live-streamed, and so it should be, if you can't make it, it'll be archived and or available.
State of the county, it's at the Floral Building, correct?
So the other thing as a follow-up is that it sounds like you've got a draft letter of support then for the initiative that you talked about originally.
I was going to go north to Portland today and for the Wednesday-Thursday meeting, and I've opted out of that. Commissioner Morgan's going to carry the water on that. So I'm going to be here for 2 days to draft. That's what I'm after for the next 2 days. I'm going to utilize that. Garnering support for the initiative.
So do you want us to wait and get a copy of that draft, review that draft, utilize that, and maybe add whatever we want to add?
Another thing we're going to come out with is we had on our last on our last ordinance, Julie Spelzer put out a marijuana at a glance, and it's just plain and simple language that anybody can read.
Did it have pictures?
And understand it. It's we're not that far back yet, but we're working on the pictures. And I think we need to do that also for the marijuana initiative. It's only a one-pager, but I think just putting it in simple language, I can hand it to somebody, and they look at it and go, oh, I get that. Because this marijuana, at a glance, I used it yesterday, and up at the Capitol, and I handed it to everybody, and they just pushed the actual O2 aside and read that.
Right.
Because it was really, it got down to half page. I said, why is this group stopping at half page? And the bottom half of the page is about our variance process and what we are doing to help the industry to adapt to the new state legislatures, what the state legislature put out. These are all things that are meant to put that transition into place for the legitimate grower.
Right.
And they go, and then we went on and a lot of the things were addressed in the bottom half of the page. So it's exciting to see that all of a sudden now everybody understood what the legalese said. They probably understood it. It was more for my benefit than anybody else at the table. But I tend to do that in the next couple of days for the initiative itself, so you'll have something that you can basically hand to anybody on the street, and they'll look at it and go, I get it.
Yeah, we'd love to.
Who are the winners? Who are all the winners, and who is the loser? Because there's one the loser, and there's a bunch of winners in this concept. So we'll get that to you. Okay.
Thank you.
And I appreciate your timely response on that because it's very important. We go to Billy Williams in the February 2nd.
Yeah.
And like I say, it's invitation only, and I think I want to have a large stack of support letters from everybody down here in the five southern counties.
Well, and I'm gone tomorrow to Saturday, so I can get it signed on Monday if we get something from you soon. Yeah. Then they can get it done in a few days, and then we'll get it back.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Chief, thank you for coming in.
You bet.
You're always welcome in the room, you know that. Yeah. It is now, anything more from the commissioners?
It's getting started.
Commissioner Morgan, you got it?
I'm good.
Okay. Yeah. We are adjourned at 10:51. Thank you very much.
For your time.
Thank you for your time.